Chapter 6. Non-responders. Policies aren't helping boys and men. Women are just naturally smarter than men, and now they are on the rise. That's Jonathan, a college junior. We're discussing why women are doing so much better in college than men. You know, the motivation for men is just not there anymore, he adds. It's a mental thing. Jonathan and I are talking over coffee in his hometown of Kalamazoo, Michigan. Kalamazoo is a special place, especially to policymakers. Not because of the Glenn Miller song, I've Got a Girl in Kalamazoo, but because of its unique free college program. Thanks to an anonymous benefactor, students educated in the city's K-12 school system get all their tuition paid at almost any college in the state. There are similar initiatives in other cities, but the Kalamazoo promise is unusually generous. It is also one of the very few to have been robustly evaluated by a trio of scholars at the Upjohn Institute, Timothy Bartik, Brad Hirschbaum, and Marta Lakowska. They find that the promise made a big difference, bigger than other promise-type programs. But the average effect disguises a stark gender divide. The program put rocket boosters on female college completion rates, increasing the number of women getting a bachelor's degree by 45%. But men's rates didn't budge. A cost-benefit analysis showed an overall gain of $69,000 per female participant, a return on investment of at least 12%, compared to an overall loss of $21,000 for each man. In other words, it was expensive and didn't work. The philosopher Bertrand Russell said the mark of a civilized man was the ability to weep over a column of numbers. For a policy wonk, the numbers in these regression tables might just do it. But it's not just the Kalamazoo promise. I've discovered a startling number of social programs that seem to work well for girls and women, but not for boys and men. I describe some of them here, first in education and training, and then in job programs. This seems to me to be a big deal, but it is getting barely any attention, not least because almost nobody knows about it. I asked Brad Hirschbaum what was behind the massive gender gap in Kalamazoo. Because he's a true scholar, Brad's answer was, "We don't know." What he means is that the gap cannot be explained statistically, at least with easily observable factors like test scores or family background. As I noted in Chapter 1, there is still a good deal of mystery surrounding the worse educational outcomes for men. But I think Jonathan is on the right track with his observation about the mental thing. If we want answers, we won't find them in the metrics, but in the minds of the young men themselves. That is one reason I went to Kalamazoo to meet some of the men the promise is designed to help. Maybe they would know why it did not. Immune to initiatives, education. I just felt like I was wasting my time in college, says Kumari, another of my interviewees. I was depressed a lot. I just didn't have much of a drive. After dropping out of Kalamazoo Valley Community College, he got a job working in a bank, and then he was fired. So he returned to his studies, this time at Michigan State University in Lansing, 70 miles to the northeast. Kumari hopes that a smaller, quieter city will make it easier for him to crack the books. After all, as he says, there's not a lot else to do here. Kumari has had a staccato journey through higher education, stopping, switching, restarting. He has changed his major many times from accounting to orthodontics. He says, "I know it sounds weird, but I like teeth and I had braces," to interior design and then to sociology. Now he's hoping to go into psychology, having discovered music and art therapy as a potential career path. His story fits with the research suggesting that men are more likely to zigzag through the college years, while women follow a straighter path. Females are just working harder, doing better, asking more questions, he says. Jalen, one of Kalamazoo's male success stories, agrees. He graduated with a BA from Western Michigan University and says he always sought out female-dominated study groups because, as he says, you just knew they would get it done. One of the other studies that jumped off my desk was an evaluation of a mentoring and support program called Stay the Course at Tarrant County College, a two-year community college in Fort Worth, Texas. Community colleges are a cornerstone of the U.S. education system, serving around 7.7 million students, largely from middle-class and lower-income families. But there is a completion crisis in the sector. Only about half of the students who enroll end up with a qualification or transfer to a four-year college within 3 years of enrolling. Many produce more dropouts than diplomas. The good news is that there are programs like Stay the Course that can boost the chances of a student succeeding. The bad news is that, as the Fort Worth pilot shows, they might not work for men, who are most at risk of dropping out in the first place. Among women, the Fort Worth initiative tripled associate degree completion. This is a huge finding. But, as with Free College in Kalamazoo, it had no impact on college completion for male students. Why? Again, the evaluators can only speculate. James Sullivan, one of the scholars who is examining the program, says, "We don't know." That phrase again. His research team does note that the case managers assigned to work with students, called navigators — it's a great name, by the way — were all women. When a program relies heavily on a close one-to-one relationship, matching the gender of the provider and recipient may be important. This is consistent with research showing that when the racial or gender identities of teachers and learners or mentors and mentees match, results are often better. The Stay the Course program and the Kalamazoo Promise are just two among dozens of initiatives in education that seem not to benefit boys or men, including the following. An evaluation of three preschool programs, Abecedarian, Perry, and the Early Training Project, found, quotes, "substantial long-term benefits for girls, but no significant long-term benefits for boys." Project Reads, a North Carolina summer reading program, boosted literacy scores significantly for third-grade girls, giving them the equivalent of a 6-week acceleration in learning, but there was a negative and insignificant reading score effect for boys. Students who attended their first choice high school in Charlotte, North Carolina, after taking part in a choice lottery, had higher GPAs, took more AP classes, and were more likely to go on to enroll in college. But again, these overall gains are driven entirely by girls. A new mentoring program for high school seniors in New Hampshire almost doubled the number of girls enrolling in four-year college, but it had, according to the authors, no average effect for boys. Urban boarding schools in Baltimore and Washington, D.C. boosted academic performance among low-income black students, but only the girls. As the evaluators note, taken literally, the point estimates imply that our findings are driven entirely by the female applicants. College scholarship programs in Arkansas and Georgia increased the number of women getting a degree, but had muted effects on white men and mixed and noisy effects for black and Hispanic men. Project STAR, which provides extra learning support and financial assistance for college freshmen, gave a big boost to women's academic performance, higher GPA, more credits, and lower rates of academic probation, but had no effect on men. MIT's Josh Angrist, a Nobel Prize winner in economics, studied this last program and has spent a lot of time in this field. He tells me that he has no theory about the gender gap. This is a more formal way of saying, "I don't know." I think the main issue is the lower levels of engagement and motivation that the young men in Kalamazoo talked about a lot. These are not things that can easily be fixed externally. Back in 2009, Angrist and his co-authors wrote, "These gender differences in the response to incentives and services constitute an important area for further study." They do indeed. But as far as I can see, nobody has heeded this call. At the very least, these results suggest that policymakers and scholars need to be much more sensitive to differential effects by gender and the potential implications for program design. Of course, there are programs that do show positive results for both genders, such as another well-evaluated community college mentoring scheme, Accelerated Study in Associate Programs, or ASAP, some other early education programs, and so on. But where there is a difference by gender, it is almost always in favor of girls and women. The only real exception to this rule is vocationally oriented programs or institutions, which do seem to benefit men more than women, which is one reason why we need more of them. If you can make it here, work. New York City is the urban expression of America's can-do spirit. Make your mark in New York, wrote Mark Twain, and you are a made man. The perfect place, then, to test a new program to help more men to make their mark. The Paycheck Plus pilot provided around 3,000 childless participants with a wage bonus of up to $2,000, with the main policy goal being to lift employment rates. A rigorous evaluation of the pilot by the MDRC research group found a relatively large positive effect on employment rates among women, but no detectable effect among men. Female participants got healthier too, the men did not. The MDRC team described the result for men as somewhat disappointing. This is something of an understatement given the hopes for the project and the falling wages and employment levels of less skilled men. There are broader policy implications here too. Paycheck Plus is seen as a trial run for a possible shift in national policy to make the earned income tax credit available to childless adults. This would not be cheap. A similar EITC expansion in the 2021 Build Back Better bill had a price tag of $13.5 billion a year. An explicit goal of EITC expansion is to help less skilled men. Gene Sperling, former National Economic Advisor to Presidents Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, argues that the policy change is, quote, important to incentivizing younger men to participate in the formal economy. But the Paycheck Plus pilot suggests that higher wage subsidies may attract more single women than single men into work. To be clear, I'm not saying this is a bad thing, just that it is not a stated principal goal of the reform. If wage subsidies don't work so well for men, what about worker training? Sadly, the evaluation studies here make for grim reading. It is hard to find examples of government-funded training programs that work well for anyone, male or female. But the few programs that have managed to move the needle often skew toward women, including the following. A training program in Milwaukee, funded as a public-private venture, had a positive, statistically significant impact on the employment rates and earnings for participating women at the two-year mark, but not for the men. Programs for dislocated workers funded by the Workforce Investment Act had greater benefits for participation for women, with the quarterly earnings increment exceeding that of males. The value of training also had greater long-run positive impacts on earnings and employment for women. Workplace-based training programs and job search assistance programs funded under the Job Training Partnership Act of 1982 produced significant positive impacts for the earnings and educational attainment of female participants, but not for the male ones. As I've said, the overall pickings are pretty slim when it comes to effective training programs. But even among the few that do show some positive impact, there is often a gender gap. If a training program works, it generally works for women, but not always for men. There is a clear recurring pattern in evaluation studies of policy interventions, with stronger effects for girls and women than for boys and men. This has profound implications for research and policy. Most obviously, evaluators must include results disaggregated by gender, and when differences are found, they should be highlighted. Right now, they're often given scant attention. In the research brief based on the evaluation of the trio of public-private training programs undertaken by public-private ventures and published through the Aspen Institute, the gender gap in outcomes was not mentioned. Even in the main report, the difference was only visible to readers who made it to Appendix D, Table 5, on page 72. Given the evidence that many programs simply do not work for half the population, it is irresponsible for policymakers not to question whether this money is being well spent. There is certainly enough evidence here to challenge any presumption in favor of gender-blind programs and services. It is no good to note these disappointing findings, shrug our shoulders, and keep on spending. Aspiration gaps. The hard question, of course, is why these initiatives have not worked for boys or men, and what might work instead. The empirical evidence on this is weak. But Tyrese, a young black man making his way through the community college in Kalamazoo, has thought hard about this question. Tyrese is exactly the kind of person the Kalamazoo Promise is intended to help. His father died when he was 5. 2 of his brothers are in prison. He observes 4 big differences between the women and men around him, First, motivation. The women are so driven. They know they have to provide for their family, he says. Second, independence. They, the women, don't really need a relationship. They can do it on their own. Third, persistence. When stuff gets hard, the guys tend to run away, the girls don't. Fourth, planning. Women tend to live in the future. Men tend to live in the present. Put these together, motivation, independence, persistence, and planning, and it is no wonder, to Therese at least, that women are doing better in school. It seems clear to me that motivation and aspiration, almost impossible to capture quantitatively, are a big part of the story here. Young women are seizing opportunities with much greater zeal than young men. Take studying abroad as another example. In recent decades, this has become much more popular, at least until the pandemic, with increasing numbers of undergraduates now grabbing their passports and phrase books and heading overseas, most often to Europe. And why not? Going to another country for a few months is a great opportunity. In a joint report, the American Institute for Foreign Study and the Institute of International Education extol the value of studying abroad. They would, of course. But it looks like they're right. Employers do seem to like hiring graduates with broader horizons. And many of the skills honed in a foreign country seem to be useful later in life. But strikingly, female students are more than twice as likely to study abroad as their male peers. There is a similar gap in European countries. Perhaps you're thinking, but maybe that's just because women are more likely to be in subjects offering more study abroad options, like languages and arts. But no, the gender gap can be found in all subjects. Once again, this gap has left researchers stumped. What we do know is that women seem to be motivated to study abroad by all kinds of factors, including having educated parents or classes focused on human diversity and difference. None of the factors have any impact on men. One thing that did seem to influence men's decision whether to study abroad was peer interactions, but in a negative direction. Men appear to motivate each other to stay put rather than hit the road. The report stresses the need for a diverse and representative pool of students heading to other countries, and serious efforts have gone into lowering barriers for non-white students, who now make up 3 in 10 study abroad students. There is no mention, however, of the 2-to-1 ratio of female to male students. It's not just studying overseas. There seems to be a greater spirit of adventure among young women. The same 2-to-1 gender imbalance can be seen in the numbers signing up for the Peace Corps, as well as the domestic equivalent, AmeriCorps. The gap is even greater in the UK's Voluntary Service Overseas programme. Young women today have wider horizons than the men. Forget all the old stereotypes about men with wanderlust out on the road. Women are the explorers now. And as so often, nobody has a good explanation why. It is not that men have fewer opportunities. It is that they are not taking them. The problem seems to be a decline in agency, aspiration, and motivation. But this hasn't happened in a vacuum. I think it's the result of a whole range of structural challenges. I've already shown that the education system is less suited to boys, and that the labour market has become a tougher place for men. But there are deeper cultural causes too. In particular, the dramatic rebalancing of power relations between men and women over the last few decades has rendered old modes of masculinity, especially as family breadwinner, obsolete. But nothing has yet replaced them. Women are becoming more independent, reflects Kumari back in Kalamazoo. More headstrong, willing to work for it. They know they need other options. By his own admission, Kumari struggles with this new world. He supports equality, but is part of a Christian denomination teaching that men should be the head of the household. He is torn between being the kind of man he's been told to be and the kind of man the world needs now. He's not the only one. A common thread running through many of the challenges facing men is the culture shock represented by women's economic independence. To truly understand what's going on with boys and men, we need anthropologists as much as economists. And we need policymakers willing to face the facts, including the facts about which programs work best. Otherwise, the danger is that some of our boys and men won't just fall behind, but will end up beyond our reach.